It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
So welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Oh, back to back on the last one. We're trying to get things kind of in the bank for summer.
You're going to take some vacation, I think, and
I don't know, we travel anyway.
We were kind of fixated on the man Christ Jesus. I thought that was a fantastic little deal.
I did. We had a letter left over from the one before, though. We didn't get read. I thought John from Virginia, he wrote a book. He wrote a note about our podcast on Where Has the Power Gone? And it wasn't really on the topic, but it was something that's happened in his life because of that. He said some guy came to a group he's a part of and asked a pretty penetrating question, and I guess nobody picked up on it. So he was kind of hoping people would. He said, I was intrigued by God bringing this person to a point of willingness to say no to whatever it is he was struggling with. He said, and I will not just float through life and sit by and wonder, where is your power? As I listened to the discussion between you and Brad this morning, I came to a peace that I had not operated in until now, that this work may have been the handiwork of God in this one man's life. I had sent out the email a few weeks ago, hoping to utilize this wondrous point of openness and seeking of the Lord that was expressed with a few of us gathered to spur some real discussion and hopefully experience a great move of God as a men's group by this moment and discussion. The email was not even responded to in writing or in discussion much at all.
The whole lead balloon thing.
We're not laughing at you, John. It's just, you know, it's so funny to think we can get people on a similar page. We can use something to get people to a place. But he said, this left me wondering a bit. I now see that the question and moment for this man was just a personal turning point for him, and that God allowed us to be there with him as encouragement at the time, and possibly yet still, rather than some awakening for the entire group. It's amazing how quickly we slip into the mindset and mode of operating that uses principles and miraculous intervention of God in anyone's life to try and force feed others with it. Man, I've done this. Expecting our own perception of the proper response. Thank you for being a tool for God to use to remind me not to do this, but rather rest in him and not put myself as blockage or stumbling block in what God is doing in someone's life, as I presume to know what needs to be done. I think that's a great lesson, I got to tell you. That's at the top of my list. When God begins to do something in your life, your job is not to pass it on to others. Not yet. It's to live it.
You're not supposed to force feed everyone else your latest, greatest revelation?
Or someone else's, you know, to try and get a group. I think all that...
Well, you got to hear this.
Oh, we're trying to get the group to all come to the same level of openness. And I think what John's discovering, which is so true, is the level of openness and transformation comes when the Holy Spirit's ready and alive, not when we decide it's a good time. And getting everybody on the same page on any given day, I think of a number of emails I've sent out to a group of folks saying, hey, we're going to all do this together. And it just, the lead balloon is a good description.
Yeah, well, I think it's often well-intentioned, but it doesn't actually go anywhere because God does tend to be individually focused on each one of us, huh?
Yeah, my greatest disillusionment, I think, in this kingdom has been that I don't have the power to manipulate the kingdom of God on earth. And
that bums you out.
That was really, yeah. I'm okay with it now, but, you know, it was hell in the hallway there for a while.
All right. Disillusionments and stumbling blocks. Huh? There's some out there, aren't there?
Boy, are there a few?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I hope this doesn't go over like a lead balloon, but this is one of those things that is just... frankly, always bugged me about
uh-oh.
This. What's with the whole effeminacy of religion? I mean, why is it that most of the folks out there seem to be a little bit more on their effeminate side? I don't know how many pastors' gatherings I've gone to.
This seems more like the start of a stand-up, man.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. I sat there going like, gosh, where are the men? You know, we talked about the whole man Christ Jesus, and it's like so many of the gatherings I was at, it's like, wait a minute, you know, doesn't anybody play sports? I mean, I know it's stereotypical and it's terrible and bad,
wow.
But I have been blown away.
What kind of pastors' conferences did you go to?
The gay ones. It was terrible. I mean,
I'm not sure that's language we're going to get away with here.
Yeah, I'm just going to pull back the curtain on my perception, if nothing else, of just going like, I don't understand why people who are focused on spirituality stuff tend to be more feely-touchy. I mean, it's like your average, you know, beer-drinking, football-watching man guy, it doesn't relate. He just doesn't relate.
Isn't that why John Eldridge wrote Wild at Heart?
Oh, I think, yeah. Go get a drum, get naked, get in the woods, whatever. It's like, you know.
I'm less interested in this podcast now than I was a few minutes ago.
No, I just, I don't understand. What is the whole, you know, why is it always so effeminate?
Well, I got into this talk with somebody in Canada, quite surprisingly, because I think religion overall is, and I don't mean the life of Christ, I'm talking about religion as an entity, is very much about being submissive and being passive, and there's an effeminacy to it that unless you're a leader in it, unless you've got some very active aggression part of it, I most of them are complaining now of religious groups. 80% are women, 20% are guys, and the guys that are coming oftentimes are little bit passive, a little bit
more on the effeminate side. It was always made me very uncomfortable. It's not my homophobia. It's the fact that it's like I'm going like, why does this not connect with the more manliness of most folks? Most more manly guys. I mean, on all
first of all, what do you mean by manly? Because I thought beer drinking, get naked in the woods. If that's your definition of male, I'm not going to join you there anyway.
I don't know.
So what is it?
I think your average guy has a disconnect with kind of church. It doesn't connect to him. And it's like, I don't want to just pander to stereotypes, but it's like things that are a little more gruff, a little more, it's like, it's always softer in religion. And I'm going like, I got a hard time when you start thinking of the Jesus being a carpenter going like, the dude's going to have muscles. He's going to have to work. He's going to sweat. It's not effeminate. But almost all the art of history has him a little more effeminate, too. And I'm just going, like, what is with this? Why is it always looking more effeminate?
I guess that's why John looked like Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, yeah, the Da Vinci Code. Well, that's Mary. It's like, no. It's like, this is, yeah. And don't even get me to the Catholic priest man-boy thing. That is just...
No, not going there. But, you know, the outfits they wear are a little bit odd.
Yeah, the pink cardinal thing, I got a problem with.
The lace cowling or something, that was a little bit much for me.
But I do. I don't under... It seems like this thing is so pervasive and so weird that you're just going like, why is it that religion stuff does gravitate towards that? I really am at a loss, but I end up going like, it's like... It disenfranchises your average guy. He just says, I don't really relate to that. You know, it's like, oh, you know, all the worship, if it's really hot, it makes you cry. And you're just going like, your average guy doesn't connect with that.
Hey, my wife got yelled at one time because she didn't cry enough during worship at a women's retreat.
And she didn't manipulate
as the pastor's wife. No, she wasn't even leading. She was just in the crowd. But
she's supposed to cry more.
Evidently. She didn't meet the crying coefficient for the pastor's wife at a women's retreat. So I don't think this whole passive, submissive, softy, I don't think it's just effeminacy versus masculinity. I don't think we're talking about effeminacy as necessarily being feminine, because I do think sometimes there's a great disconnect with some women with the whole passive ritualistic environment that religion has embedded itself in. So I think it'd be true for both genders. It'll be interesting to see what kind of
reaction
stuff our forum does with this. It could be the lead balloon, or it could be 27 pages of commentary.
I don't know. I think there's something there that just kind of panders to that. It's almost like weak, dependent. I'm unable, and it's like I understand the whole needing to depend on Christ, but where is the genuine celebration of what God has placed in me and how I walk with him? Why does that leave me in the unable, in tears, and I you know.
And that's not a lot of my history, so I'm listening to you grouse about this.
You're
and I'm
laughing
going,
at me. Bro.
I am laughing. It's hysterical. But no, because the situation I was in for 15 years with a fellowship that I helped plant, I look back at that, and people who came and visited us said, man, this is one of the most active groups I've seen of men really involved. And these were, you know, we're volleyball players. We're playing volleyball 3 days a week. We're very much involved in a lot of things, helping each other pour cement. And, I mean, I all that kind of stuff. It was very, but the men were very active spiritually. And my dad has always been the most active one spiritually in my home growing up. And my dad is a farmer. He's not a passive male at all. So my experiences and my pictures and images growing up in this thing has not been the same thing. I think overall you hear people talk about how religion effeminizes men. And I think that that is true. As one guy said to us one time, it's emasculating when he's talking about what religion does to you in terms of your place as a decision maker, your place as an active, thinking ahead, having opinions. But when you, particularly I think in those Pentecostal / charismatic, independent things where the pastor is king and no one has any.
Or queen.
I almost said that, but I didn't. Why don't you have any sense of discretion?
Gosh. So many of them.
You don't have an internal editor.
Open sexual sin is homosexual, and I'm going, what's with that? Why are you drawn to the pastorate?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm serious. The cat's out of the bag. Why is that is such a pervasive sexual dysfunction within the pastorate?
Oh, my
God. What's up with that?
See, I don't know. I asked that question.
I'm not homophobic. I'm just tired of seeing it.
When I was at Oral Roberts University, I asked that question one time of the campus chaplain. Because people come to ORU, and the number one reason people got thrown out of ORU was for having sexual orientation issues, if we could say it that way. And I asked the chaplain one day, I said, what is the deal with it? Why are so many of them here? Particularly because you know the honor code, you sign an honor code, you know, you can't be that way and be here and participate in the dorms and all that good stuff. And yet every year there's a certain number of people being asked to leave the university for that. And they were trying to be, you know, people there trying to have that orientation that are trying to change through the life of Jesus, not an issue. But when it was people acting out, recruiting others, a bit of an issue. And I asked him that one day and he says, he just looked at me with a shock on his face and he says, what? Don't you think the charismatic renewal draws these people? And I, really? How? And this is back in the 70s. You got to remember the 70s.
But it's still working today.
It is still working today, unfortunately. But it was all the gold chains and glitter and the Rolex watches and the guys up front and the effeminate wives. And the, and you still got some of those foo-foo hairdos.
Oh, yeah, all over the...
But he said, actually, the way leadership works in the charismatic renewal, the glitter and the time people were wearing tuxes with the little lace shirts and all that stuff. He said it absolutely attracts people like that to that kind of a movement because the movement was all about celebrity. And, you know, honestly, when I look back, I think he was right. Not that everybody involved was that way. Of course not. But it draws a disproportionate number of people who struggle with the glitter and the limelight and, you know, gonna have gold chains around the neck and whatever. But
I know. I just for me, it's just a profound disconnect. I mean, you look at the. I'm going to poke at the old Catholic Church, and it's like, what is the whole upholding of the celibacy of priests and the singleness? Like that's a helpful dysfunction in that system. You know, we got to get a whole bunch of single guys, and it's like, well, okay, what do they end up doing most of the time? There's some real serious problems in those seminaries.
He's just like a little boy with a stick, just beating the heck out of a bear, just waiting to see if you can wake him up. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay.
But what is with it? You know, why do we, you know, call priests unto a single life, and yet they have an absolute epidemic problem with homosexual pedophilia going on? You're just going like...
Now I thought they got that under control now.
And you're just going like... And that is the stereotype, that is the massive image of, quote, the church. You're just going like, why is that? Why does it gravitate towards that? What's up with that? That seems to be so far removed from reality of who Christ is. And you're just going like... And yet that unfortunately seems to be the tide. Do you know what to say?
I'm just...
Well, you're
sitting here, deer
in his truck headlights, going like, where do I take this? Just, do not say anything to me, Brad.
Just keep going.
It blows my mind. I mean, it's like,
get that.
You'll get them. Sure, keep those cards and letters coming.
I'm not sure.
Maybe I am, I got hoof and mouth disease, but I do. I just, I sit back and I just go like, gosh, when I hear all of the jokes and all of the things that our basic culture is kind of laughing about when they look at the church, I'm just going like, why in the world?
Now, you're not using church in a way I like.
No, okay.
The institution of organized religion. Okay, there you go.
Why have things devolved into the state that they have?
I don't know. We need a historian here. Ask me questions I can't answer. I mean, for a long time, I think that the organized religion has a difficult time with dealing with sexuality, period.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it. It's the number one temptation in most guys' lives. Everybody will tell you that. Guys think about sex every 7 seconds. There was a survey recently about Fuller Seminary did it, about pastors. 60% admitted to being addicted to pornography on the internet in their own private time.
Oh, that's helpful.
But when's the last time you've been to a gathering and we talked about sexuality and we talked about the struggle with sexual temptation and we talked about people who have been broken sexually by, I mean, we can laugh about Catholic priests and the whole man-boy thing, but there are people listening to us right now that were affected by that, hurt deeply by that. And destroyed deeply by the fact that culture still really doesn't take it seriously. Supposedly the Catholic Church is now, but hey, no one believes that that's really true. And yet it just kind of goes on because we don't know how to deal with it. We're uncomfortable with sexuality things, so we don't really address what's going on between men and women sexually. And we don't address it in the culture. And because we don't address it in the culture, and the safest thing was like Paul, you know, a man without a wife is freer to give himself to the gospel. So here's what we'll do. We'll just, you know, have single men be in the ministry, but we don't take on seriously the struggle with that in terms of their own sexual appetites and desires. And now you're not, and nothing in Jesus' language that said people needed to be unmarried to do the work of the kingdom. I mean, that's absurd. But the idea was that sex is kind of a dirty thing. And so even
well,
in
there
marriage,
you have the disconnect from the humanity of Jesus. And it's like, you know, look, I remember the last temptation of Christ. Never saw it because I was a tiny little kid at the time that it was
I was older, but I've never seen it either. Okay? So my holiness is intact.
A star on your chart.
No, a tassel on my robe.
But you sit there and it's like, you know, the basic premise of Jesus is tempted in all ways such as we are, and yet he without sin, I sit there and I go like, I don't know that it's such a heinous, heretical deal to think that, guess what, Jesus might have something to reveal and unveil to our understanding of what it is to live as a holy person and a sexual person. Do you think Jesus doesn't know anything about that?
No, I think he knows everything about it.
but it's as if we can't talk about that. We can't deal with that. It's like I do think some of the reason there's all the dysfunction that never gets healed is that is an arena that we just are taboo to go into.
It really is. I think we're conflicted to deal with sexuality in religious terms. One of the questions I throw out to bridge builder groups when I meet with them, it's a statement that actually Robert Bork made in his confirmation hearing, or no, he made it at a Christian Coalition conference. He said, in the last 30 years, our nation has lost its shared moral first values. And I ask groups, do you agree or disagree with this statement? I don't tell them where it came from. I just ask, do you disagree with this? Have we lost in the last, which he made that statement 10 years ago, so now it's 40 years ago. Have we lost our shared moral first principles? And it's interesting how divided the room is. If you have a kind of a Christian background, or Christian point of view of the world, those people always say, absolutely,
oh, yeah. Amen,
we have lost it totally in the last 40 years. When you ask people who don't have that background, they're pretty much saying, no, I don't think we have. And then when you start talking about, well, what principles are you thinking of? Honesty, citizenship, liberty, freedom, civil rights. I mean, they will talk, yeah, we have some shared moral first principles that are pretty strong in the culture. When you ask the other group, which ones have we lost? It's either about religious expression in the world, which we're really conflicted about that right now, unfortunately. But mostly it's about sex and lying about sex. You know, religious people are just really, we don't know how to deal with it. It goes on in marriage. It's how you have kids. But I don't think there's a healthy conversation among Christians about sexuality. I think men struggle with sexuality. The reason why, and I think some women do too. I don't mean to be a chauvinist there, but we probably are in this whole podcast, but.
Not I.
This may never air. This is one
where. Oh, stop it.
Just
record next week.
But because we don't talk about real issues, I think there's a disconnect. If that's a real temptation for most guys. And nothing I do in a corporate gathering helps me deal with the sexual struggles in my life. And I know many guys who really disconnect themselves from feeling like they can walk closely with Jesus today because they're struggling with sexual temptation and failure. And as long as you're doing that, as long as you think that's between you and Jesus and that Jesus can't crawl into that with you and sort it out. That's what I loved about Brenda's letter last week, is a homosexual woman, is a lesbian, saying, man, God got into that with me and through a whole lot of things sorted out that point of, because I think that is brokenness.
Right, and she didn't say it was easy. There's a lot of pain in that. And
see, guys will take a challenge. And I think this Jesus wants to crawl right into our sexuality and deal with it. But if we don't deal with it, then what you've got left are guys, oftentimes in religious settings, that are very passive spiritually, very passive people, and they have that more sense of being more effeminate, I guess.
Yeah, it's a whole
and the charismatic renewal. They like jewelry
and nice suits.
I still won't wear a chain around my neck to this day for any reason because of that.
Oh, you're just scared.
Now you're crossing lines.
That's my job. I am the loose cannon here.
You are, but I'm helping school districts not have students like you talk that way. Because it's devastating to people who struggle with sexual brokenness in their lives.
When we look at the reality that Christ is a human being, and we look at the reality that we do have a great high priest who had to be made like us, that he might become a merciful and faithful. I sit there and it's like, okay, we're missing something profound in terms of being able to wrestle and grapple through and say, all right, Jesus, walk me through this. Help me out here. How did you struggle with it? I mean, if we think that, okay, guess what? Jesus never had testosterone going through his body. He never had a sexual thought. You're sitting there like, is this that's just sinful and wrong? That's bad.
And even the idea that it's dirty, you know, even we say, oh, it's okay, maybe in marriage. But most of the way religion relates to is the whole idea of sexuality and even thinking about, I remember one, this is funny, when we were in college, we had our campus doctor tell us, he and his wife were doing a marriage seminar, and it said that at the highest point of their intimate encounters, they pray in tongues together because that's the biggest high sexually. I still think that's funny. It's actually never crossed there in my mind. I think it's hysterical. But what I think's jarring about is you got God in the bedroom. That's just the place where we kind of.
He's not looking. He can't look. He's a voyeur.
He goes away during that time. I think it is difficult for people to put God there. And yet God is. God created this.
Didn't
create
it was dirty. His idea.
He didn't create it ugly. He created it beautiful. And, you know, sexual intimacy between best friends growing together in a lifelong relationship of marriage is just the most beautiful, wonderful thing in the world. I mean, God's not there going, oh, gosh, that was a bad idea. I shouldn't have done it that way. But if we don't talk about it, if we don't help people sort through it, sexual brokenness is huge in our culture. It is absolutely huge. And we rarely address it except to lay out the rules. Here are the rules. You know, sex with your wife only when she wants to, for life, no one else. Get it right. Don't get it wrong. And even the temptation for other things, even the struggle is something that we hide from and run from. And we don't help people. So why do we all end up, I guess, effeminate in religion? It's because we're ignoring some pretty big things. We're ignoring some huge things. And guys just... it's a turnoff. I had a guy working on my roof this weekend, and I don't think he comes from any of the places I come from and all this, but he had a little symbol of Jesus on his truck. So I said, believer, huh? He said, oh, yeah, sort of. I said, what does that mean? He coaches football for a Christian school. And they said, you should go to church. You should go to church. I tell you, I'm so bummed about church. It bores me to tears. I haven't gone in years. And I said, that's fine. That's fine. I think it's great. I go once in a while when I'm speaking, but I don't hang out there on Sundays. He goes, really? And so we got talking. I gave him a copy of the Jake book because I thought he might enjoy it. And he came back the next day to finish up. And he said, I haven't read a book in 3 years. He said, I read the first part of that book. He said, I tell you, I'm interested. I'm going to read it. So I think, pretty much it's turned men off. And those that go mostly sit through it bored out of tears because they're committed to their wife or committed to whatever. Or unless, you know, for me, I got involved because I got active. I want to be involved in the leadership of it. I want to be involved at that level of it until I saw how duplicitous I had to be to survive at that level. And that's when I said, I don't do that anymore. I'm done with that. I mean, there's some wonderful men that I hate for all men that go to church, to go to a congregation on Sunday morning now to feel like we're calling them effeminate.
Oh, no. Because we're not. Yeah, yeah. That, we're obviously, not. That's not fair. That's not right. But
that's not true.
I do think there's an unfortunate stereotype that can be seen, and it's just a disconnect.
I mean,
most of the guys that I meet, when they find out that, you know, I used to pastor, it's kind of like they end up going like, what? I don't understand that. It's like, well, I like you. And you're just going like, why is there that bias?
Yeah.
Why is there a sense that, you know, yeah, but you're not one of those, like, effeminate guys. Why are you, like, you know,
why are you all sweaty and dirty and coaching baseball?
And frankly, off color sometimes.
That we've noticed.
I've been good. Well, maybe not today, but.
Well, I heard a guy tell a story one time inviting some construction worker friends of his to his Sunday morning congregation. And the first song, and they'd never been to one of those things before. And the first song they sang that morning was, "We Are the Circumcision." It was the hymn of the morning. And the guys kind of turned to him, and he said, for the first time, he realized how absurd that was. And that these guys probably were not coming back.
I missed that worship song. I never learned that.
We didn't either. I got thrown out early on in some of the groups.
No.
But
we are the circumcision.
if that's your introduction to the deal.
Put your foreskin here.
See, I knew you were going to take that too far. I knew you were going to take a stick and beat the bear again. Would you just leave the bear alone?
I have a gift for it.
Oh,
please. Oh, that's
I'm
going to
spend all afternoon editing this.
No, you
this.
Cannot. No, let it go. Unedited. That's part of our truth and packaging laws.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. Okay.
This is who we are. This is me. Warts and all.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, if there's anyone still listening that we haven't offended.
Well, this needs to go into the explicit side of the iTunes thing. I'm not
that
sure.
That could be fun. We might get a whole new audience if we branded this explicit.
I don't even know how to do
that.
I
haven't even used any words that make it go there.
Not yet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you want me to head there?
Still another 5 or 6 minutes.
You're egging me on?
Here's the line in the sand. Don't cross it.
Every time you put a line, I do like to cross it. It's just...
What I do like about what we're talking about, though, is as I do like... And I wrote an article in the Body Life live stream thing I do about a year or so ago about sexual struggles and sexual temptations. And the amount of response I got from that was just overwhelming because it wasn't the rules. It was simply we've all or most of us have some kind of sexual brokenness twisted in life. We all know what temptation is sexually, whether you yield to it or not. We all know what that is. And if we're going to be on this journey and you're going to journey on this with guys, you've got to take that temptation and struggle seriously. You can't just talk about greed and money and family life. And you've got to take it seriously because it is an issue.
Oh, virtually every guy that, you know, that pastored for a while, you know, guy would pull me aside, hey, you know, can I talk to you about something? I said, oh, what do you mean, masturbation? And the guy,
now we just moved to the explicit side.
Oh, yeah.
Of
well,
the
you drew a line. I had to go there. You're just inviting me. But the reality is because we cannot talk about it openly, real, as if it's there to be dealt with. You're left with the dysfunction. You're left with a Jesus who cannot go into that room, cannot deal with that. That's so terrible, so heinous, so whatever. You know, it's like, you know what? If we cannot bring this openly and honestly and actually talk about it, it's there. You got to deal with it. It's the elephant under the carpet. If we got to keep throwing the carpet over the elephant, you know, the living room just looks pretty stupid all the time.
So we really are talking about next week starting the Man Journey podcast, aren't we?
The Man Show.
I mean, I'm not sure. I think part of the catch with this is it's not always appropriate to talk about these things in mixed settings. And yet at the same time.
Oh, no, I've pastored enough to know that is not a male issue at all.
I know it's not a male issue, but there are people uncomfortable talking about it in rooms.
But that's perhaps why we have the problems that we do. I grew up and my father was a urologist, okay? I didn't want to talk about any of this stuff. You know, it's like this was uncomfortable. Yeah, you drew another line. But I realized
urology's fine.
For me to find freedom in all of this, I had to get to a place where I wasn't afraid to talk about real life.
I hear you.
And I think that's what, you know.
Well, we've done it today. And please,
Wayne has a shocked
look
on his face.
That's BradAtTheGodJourney.com. brad@thegodjourney.com. And your Woo-hoo! Cards and letters are very welcome.
Yeah, keep and those cards and letters coming. I'm out landscaping, so I'm not emailing as much.
If you need help with a crisis group, Brad's ready to start one. Yeah, at least you're in the Southern California area, and we'll see what happens. But I like that. And I like the fact that oftentimes, I thought this was funny. In the 9/11 disaster, which is not funny itself, but right after that, they had tapes of these guys that were part of the hijackers. The night before, they were with hookers in their hotel rooms in Boston. And that came out like, oh, see, now they're hypocrites and all that. I mean, which is why the women wear all the stuff they wear so guys can't see anything. Because the thing is, if you're tempted, you'll fall. So we've got to hide the temptation. That's why women in that culture wear garments where you can't even see a form of a woman's body. Because the idea is, and why they wanted to blow up America was because sexuality is so pervasive and the temptations are always there that, of course, you know, to think that, oh, they were with hookers on the night before, so obviously they're hypocrites, that just underscored what the whole Taliban view of morality, which is, guys are weak. Guys are, if they're tempted, they're false. So we've got to take all temptation out of the way, which means we've got to clothe the women in tents. And then we've got to blow up cultures. I'm serious. Then we've got to blow up cultures who don't hide stuff. And I'm telling you, our culture doesn't hide anything. This is summer in Southern California. Women, what women wear on the street, what women wear on airplane flights these days and going through air terminals. I mean, it's unbelievable what you see every day. And if God's not bigger than that in your life, the temptations are rampant. And I know a lot of guys, and most guys that I deal with on the road, and we sit down and talk honestly, this is where the struggle is. And the thought is, until I get my sexuality conformed to what God wants, I'm not going to have any kind of relationship with him. And what I always want to say
is, you're disenfranchised, and I'm part of those bad people. And it's like, the reality, the good news is, you know what? Freedom is real. God can actually bring a glorious freedom into the sexuality of people's lives that's healthy, whole, celebrated, and it's like, yeah, that's great.
Absolutely.
But you're not going to get there by avoidance.
And there's not a sexual brokenness God can't heal.
Yeah.
But he's got to get in there to be part of the healing. You can't fix it yourself to make yourself better for God. That's the lie of this thing that so many people struggle with. I've just got to stop. I've got to follow the rule, and then God will be my friend. Instead of, you know, God's willing to crawl right in there with you in the midst of your worst moment of brokenness and your failure to sin and temptation. That's where the healing for God starts. As much as Jesus peeled back that, you know, you heard the ancients say, if you commit adultery, that's a sin. I tell you, if you lust after a woman, it wasn't Jesus saying, ah, see, caught ya. It was Jesus saying, that's where I'm going to find you for healing. That's where it begins. It begins on the inside. It doesn't begin on the outside. And there's so much that's underlined. And I think for sexuality above everything, most guys feel like, well, I should be able just to stop and resist and don't look at that anymore. And the fact is, most disciplined things work 2, 3, 4, 5 months at most. And then there's these periods of commitment not to and then relapse, and commitment not to and relapse. And that's just an ongoing story, because until the brokenness is healed on the inside, the failure is going to continue to come on the outside. And if anything communicates from this, is say, gosh, religion may be an effeminate reality. I don't even know how to go there. But the life of Jesus is for real men, real women, wrestling with real issues, wanting to know who he is and live in that reality. And if it's not that, then it's just a joke, really.
When I was a college pastor, we used to do these sex and dating sleepovers. How's that?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, you're a sick man.
I mean, 60 and 80 kids in our home. For an orgy for the weekend. For the entire weekend. And because of most kids have never heard anything. Most adults have never heard anything.
Except the rules.
But they haven't even heard the rules. They haven't even gotten God's heart behind sexuality. We go from Genesis through Revelation and cover every single Bible verse that explicitly says anything about sex, God's standards, what's his intentions.
Wow.
And I mean, to this day, I'll still get people calling saying, you know, can I get a set of those? I mean,
you taped them?
Yeah, we taped them. About 6 hours of material a full booklet, answer booklet that goes through. And it covers what God's heart is behind sexuality. And I did it largely because, you know, growing up, nobody ever instructed me in anything. You know, it's like...
I thought you had the urology dinner.
Yeah, but it's not as if I said, you know, on my wedding night, you know, I'm getting married. My dad in the car on the way to the church says, hey, Brez, anything you need to know? And I'm like, Dad, you know, this might have been helpful some other time, but no, really, I can take it from here, Pop. Thanks. But the reality is nowhere in church had anyone ever instructed me in terms of what's right, what's wrong.
Everyone, so you have this in audio? People can order these if they want to?
Yep, they can order. Keep with those cards and letters coming. it's a phenomenal resource, and it's not just for, you know, college kids, high school kids. I mean, I've had married couples call me and say, look, can we have those? Because it basically puts God's whole heart for sexuality and the gift of sex that it is in context. That when you understand that, man, this is liberating, not restraining.
So if people want to write you, they can find out more about how to get these things.
Yes, they can.
And we can get them on CD and
yep.
Make them available and sell them for $100 a set or something. And then we can not do landscaping anymore.
Yeah. Get me off the backyard.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.